Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's birth stories are with Molly Chesterson. Both of Molly's labors have started with inductions, but under different circumstances. After having an epidural for her first birth, Molly was hoping for an epidural-free experience the second time around. It was an intense close call at the end when she went from 4 centimeters to baby in about half an hour while her husband was getting food. Stay tuned for this roller coaster ride. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Yoga Sleep, creators of white noise machines to help you and your baby fall asleep quickly and stay asleep since 1962. Go to yogasleep.com/birthful for 20% off a sound machine. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Family Album, a family-focused photo sharing app that makes it easy for parents to share photos and videos of their kids with their family. Find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, hello, mighty parents-to-be. Thank you for listening and all the love you give the show. If what you hear is helpful, do make sure you subscribe. It's free. That way you won't miss a thing. To support this podcast, support its sponsors, which for this week's case are Yoga Sleep and Family Album. Now, if you're around week 30 of your pregnancy, it is the ideal time for you to start preparing for life with a baby. And a great way to get postpartum ready is by signing up for my Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com. The classes are filled with vital information on not just how to survive, but actually thrive with your newborn starting from week one. When you sign up, you get immediate lifetime access to all the materials so you can take the class at your own pace. And then you can also go back and rewatch the videos after your baby is born to refresh your memory. Go sign up at birthfulcourses.com. Definitely do it now before baby arrives. All right. So my guest today is Molly Chesterson, and Molly's first birth started with an induction after her water broke pre-labor. Now, for her second birth, she chose to schedule an induction, and I'd really appreciate how this story underlines the fact that only you can make the choices that are right for you and your family, even if the super fast ramp up at the end caught everyone by surprise. So let's get to it. Hello, Molly. It is so, so good to have you here on the show today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, and I'm excited to hear your stories. And before we get into that, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure. So my name is Molly. I'm originally from upstate New York, and I now live in Illinois with my two daughters and my husband. And we've been out here for 4 years now, but yeah, that's basically it.
Mm-hmm. So you were in my neck of the woods, which wasn't always my neck of the woods.
Okay. Yes. Yes. I've heard I was born at Strong Hospital. So I hear in some of the podcasts when you talk about where you were. So I'm familiar with the area.
Excellent. Yeah. And I'm familiar with Strong Hospital for sure. And you have two kids, one's two, and then you have a 2 week old little girl, yeah. Freshly squeezed.
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. So I definitely want to hear, you know, a bit about both stories. Why don't you tell us where you were at, say, 3 years ago when you were pregnant and thinking, oh, I'm going to give birth for the first time. What were your thoughts and wishes and approach to birth?
Yeah, so actually, when we were trying to get pregnant, and it was, 3 years ago, on February 24th, we actually had an ectopic pregnancy that I didn't know about and had an emergency surgery to remove a tube and then had to do some fertility treatment to get pregnant with my daughter. And so getting pregnant was kind of difficult, and I have PCOS. So when I got pregnant, I had to have some injections, and it was I was just very scared the entire pregnancy, and then wanting to go into the birth, I wanted to have as much information as possible, and I didn't want to have any medications during birth. So I would say during the entire pregnancy, I would listen to a lot of podcasts and books to try and just get as much information as possible to set me up for the best possible birth experience that I could have.
What were some of your favorite books?
So I liked the book Expecting Better. I read that with my first pregnancy. I read What to Expect When You're Expecting. I didn't it feel like it was a book that I personally loved. And then I read a couple others. I don't remember because this time around I didn't really read any books. It was more podcasts, but I definitely listened to your podcast with my daughter, and I was also listening to, I think it's called the Pregnancy Podcast, which had like weekly episodes that my husband and I would listen to talk about, and it talked about what your body was going through each week, which I thought was helpful for him to kind of have him understand, especially in those early weeks when you're not showing, but you just really don't feel well. So things like that.
Yeah, the week by week. That's a good one. I think that was that she has two series, Vanessa Mortensen, I think.
It's something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I will put it on the show notes for sure. So then, were you doing anything to lessen your fear?
No, not really. And we didn't take any, we took a couple classes at the hospital, but we didn't take any birth classes. But I took a breastfeeding class, which was phenomenal. And we took a CPR class. And then, other than that, with pregnancy, I would say to lessen the fear of that, not really. I mean, once I could feel movement and stuff, it was a little bit more comfortable. But those early weeks, and I'm sure for a lot of people, are just scary, because you can't feel the baby. And, obviously that's when a lot of early miscarriages and things like that happen. So you just kind of have to deal with the fear, I guess, in whatever way works. But I wasn't doing much else than just listening to things and reading.
Yeah, and I always like to suggest as a resource Parijat Deshpande and her book Pregnancy Brain, but also just following her Instagram. Her background is a mental health, and I've had her on the podcast several times. I truly resonate with her work, and she talks about how all that fear and the anxiety that you're having is a little bit of your nervous system not being still in a fight or flight mode from the previous trauma. And so until you get your nervous system into calmness back again, that's going to help lessen the anxiety and the fear. Because it's not irrational. It's just your body's still stuck in that process.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'll definitely check that out, even though I'm not pregnant right now, but I think that would be good to listen to and check out her book.
Absolutely. I'll link it on the show notes. And so, okay, you did the classes, the breastfeeding class, this year, the baby class, and then how did it start?
So with my first daughter, I was 40 weeks and one day, and we went to the gym, and that night my water broke at like 3 in the morning. So we had had a scheduled induction at 41 weeks because at my practice they don't want you going past that. So we had just had our appointment and had that scheduled, and then a couple nights later my water broke. So we went into the hospital, but I wasn't actually in labor. Just my water had broken. So that's kind of how it started. And like I said, that was at like 3 in the morning. So it was kind of how I feel like you hear about water breaking, but then people say that's not really how it happens. But for me, it was a big pop and a big gush, and it just never stopped.
Right, and it was while the water keeps coming, your body keeps making it, so it never stops. But big pop, I love that big pop. It's so weird, right? It's the water balloon.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. It felt like a water balloon popped, and it just woke me right up out of my sleep.
When did labor actually start? Because it doesn't happen so often, but I think about 10%, 8% of pregnancies have. So what it's called the preterm or premature rupture of membranes, which is breaking before labor, pre-labor rupture of membranes.
So when we got to the hospital around 4 a.m., after just kind of getting everything ready and going, And they checked me, and I still wasn't even quite 1 centimeter, and I think I was like 30% of face. And so they just got me ready to start Pitocin, and I think they started it at like 6 a.m. And so I don't know if it would have kind of kickstarted on its own sometime after that. They just kind of put me on Pitocin right away. And then I got checked at like 11 a.m. and was still only 1 centimeter dilated. So I'm not sure when it actually would have started or did start, but I got Pitocin pretty early into it.
And so that's a tricky situation. And I'll link to an episode, show notes about I'll sh a web post I will link in the show notes from Evidence-Based Birth about the inductions for pre-labor rupture membranes. And really, the statistics shows that about 80 to 90% of people will go into labor on their own within 24 hours of water breaking. So waiting is an option of.
Yeah, I think I was really scared to wait for two reasons. One, I was GBS positive, which I know you can, there's all both sides, but I really wanted to get the antibiotics with enough time. And the other thing is my mom actually, when she had given birth to her four kids and me specifically, she had labors where she would go from water breaking to having the baby within just a matter of hours, and go from a couple centimeters to delivery within 20 minutes, 30 minutes for all of her births. So I was in this mindset that that was going to be me and I wasn't going to be in the hospital. So I was like, I need to be in this setting where, if that's the case, I'm ready to, I have the doctors around, which is where I felt the most comfortable. So I was just like, yep, start Pitocin, let's just do it. But I have listened to a lot of podcasts and things where people wait and they labor starts on their own.
Well, and that makes a lot of sense with that history and having the GBS positive. Yeah, that with that combination of water breaking kind of puts you moving towards the hospital sooner than later. Yeah. So then when did it get going?
So, like I said, they started Pitocin around 6 a.m. But actually, when I got to the hospital and I was still in triage, they gave me my IV, and my heart rate dropped really, really low, and so did the baby's. And they didn't tell us what was happening. They just all kind of rushed in, and my husband was just looking at the monitors and was like, "What is going on?" And so they kind of flipped and did a bunch of turns, and I don't know if it was the IV, but it through that happening, they said they thought the cord was around the baby's neck. And so that also kind of just scared me with timing and things like that. But so they started Pitocin around 6 a.m. and then around, I don't know, 11 is when I started really feeling contractions, and I thought I was going to be much further along, but I was only 1 centimeter dilated. And at that point, at 11, I think I was 100% of face. But I actually got the epidural at that time at 1 centimeters. And going into the birth, I really did not want to get an epidural. I knew I just wanted to have no pain medication, but it was so intense and I was not prepared for it. Even though I read and I listened to things, I didn't have any coping techniques, and neither did my husband. So we didn't really know how to deal with the pain or breathe through the pain. And I thought to myself, I'm only 1 centimeter. There's no way I'm going to be able to go all day like this in so much pain. So I got the epidural, which I was really disappointed in myself. But after getting it, I slept, and I actually was doing some work on my computer, and my husband slept. And so it was a really relaxing birth experience, I would say. But I was really just disappointed in myself. For me, it felt like I was just kind of giving up. So that was around 11 a.m. And then at like 3 p.m., I felt a ton of pressure, and I was actually fully dilated. But the baby was still kind of high, so we let her labor down for an hour or two, And then when I was ready to push, it was just about 20 minutes and she came right out. So looking back at that, I had thought to myself after the birth, I should have just waited because it actually went pretty quickly, even after getting the epidural. So it took me a while to kind of get over the fact that I got an epidural when I just really didn't want one.
Well, and when things are so intense and overwhelming that, you were on Pitocin, and Pitocin makes things, it acts differently, right? It acts as just a hormone, not a hormone and a neurotransmitter. Like your regular oxytocin does that. So it crosses the brain-blood barrier and tells your body, hey, you're contracting, send some endorphins. Whereas Pitocin doesn't do that and, in fact, blocks the receptors so that when your brain goes, are you contracting? Do you want me to send anything? They're like, no, we're good. Don't
Yeah.
send anything. So it's a different. Did you find now that you've had, both experiences, did you find that the sense of those early contractions with the Pitocin felt different than the ones that you had with your second birth, or no?
So I actually had Pitocin with my second birth too.
Oh, okay. Spoiler
So,
alert.
yeah. So I don't know, but I think the other thing is I had my birth plan kind of all typed up, and it was a very simple birth plan that really just said, please don't offer me pain medicine. We wanted to delay cord clamping, delay a bath, skin to skin, like very just routine type of things. There was nothing wild on there, but I was offered pain medication multiple times my first birth. And when the doctor came in and saw how I was kind of dealing with it, she was like, you can just get the epidural. You don't need to be a hero. And kind of was saying things that made me feel like, you know what, forget it. I'm just gonna get it. So I think for me, in my second birth, really making sure I didn't listen to any of that. And I was like, I know I can do this. I know I have my own reasons why. And the other thing is, after my birth with my first daughter, I had a lot of leg numbness, in the upper part of my right leg for about 6 weeks after the birth, and it was really actually painful. And it felt like a pins and needle type thing, and I never had that before I had her. I don't know if it was related to the epidural, but it was really painful for a long time. And so that was, I would say, for my second birth. And even n another reason on why I didn't want the epidural is I had that side effect, whether it was related to the epidural or not, I don't know, but it was a lot of leg numbness that was just really painful.
And yeah, I want to hear more about that second birth, and let's take a break. When we come back,
Okay.
I have more questions about the epidural as well. We'll be right back. If you're expecting, you are probably a bit anxious about the sleep deprivation that's going to come with having a newborn. So my question is, have you gotten a white noise machine yet? White noise is soothing, it mimics the shushes your baby hears in the womb, and it also helps to mask random disruptive noises that would otherwise wake your baby. I absolutely love using white noise as a positive sleep association, and I recommend the Yoga Sleep brand. I have, in fact, several Yoga Sleep sound machines, and I like the different options they provide. For example, their Whoosh multi-sound machine has 8 different white noise options, as well as nature sounds, relaxing melodies, and 2 timers. That is the perfect option to have in your bedroom or the nursery. Then in your diaper bag, you could have their Hush compact sound machine, which is small and portable and comes with a baby-safe clip so you can attach it anywhere, like a stroller or on a pack and play. The Hush also has a gentle amber nightlight and 3 soothing sounds, so you can choose from bright white noise, deep white noise, or gentle surf, and of course, it has volume control. White noise is a natural approach to better sleep and relaxation. And at Yoga Sleep, they've been making products for sleep for over 50 years. In fact, their founder invented the very first white noise machine, which used to be called a sound conditioner because it mimicked the sound of an air conditioner fan. Yoga Sleep products are backed by a 101-night promise, meaning you can try them risk-free. And they also make other quality sleep products like the highly rated yoga bed mattress and bedding accessories, so Yoga Sleep is really a one-stop shop for all things sleep-related. Go to yogasleep.com/birthful to save an exclusive 20% off a sound machine for natural sleep for the whole family. That's yogasleep.com/birthful to get 20% off. yogasleep.com/birthful. And we are back talking to Molly Chesterton. And so did you find that, you know, like the epidural, it can be a really good tool. I have nothing against epidurals, except that they do come with side effects and risks. And so being able to weigh that and support, especially if you had your birth plan that said, don't offer me pain meds, having a disregard of that instead of helping you move around or try to do something for coping mechanisms, see if you can get on top of those contractions before it's not taking the epidural away, but giving you options, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel you had more options for your second birth?
I think I myself and my husband came in more prepared with coping mechanisms. So we still didn't do a hospital birth class, but we found one online through, her name is Sarah Levon. She's a doula and a labor and delivery nurse in LA who has YouTube and a podcast, things like that. But she did an online class that we took that was specifically for coping with labor. And we just at home one night did it and practiced all of the techniques. And I think that set us up for more success the second time around, because when contractions got intense, my husband knew how to apply counter pressure. He knew how to help me count and just deal with it in a much better way.
Mm-hmm. And they're simple techniques, right? They work marvelously, mm-hmm. but it's simple stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really simple. I would, you know, I thought it was going to be really complex on how to help you deal with the pain, but it wasn't. It was just something that it was a nice experience to do ahead of time together. And it was just the two of us. And then it was also really nice in the hospital when things got intense to be able to fall back on that.
Yeah. So you did this online class with comfort measures and coping mechanisms. And what other things were different during that first preparation? Or during that second preparation, your second labor?
Yeah, I would say in general, in the pregnancy, so leading up to pregnancy with our second daughter, we did fertility treatment again. We actually had a miscarriage. It was a really long road to get there. But once we did, I was actually a lot more at ease in the pregnancy. And I don't know if that's because I had already been pregnant before and knew a little bit more what to expect. And also I had a kid at home, so I was a little bit more preoccupied at home, and you don't have as much time to just kind of sit around and think about the pregnancy. So in the pregnancy, I wasn't as anxious and nervous, but I listened to a lot of your podcasts and birth stories again, as well as listen to a lot on the Birth Queens podcast and the Birth Hour podcast, and just listening to more birth stories, because I wanted to just hear how other women coped with the pains of labor and when things got really intense, and to just hear a lot of different stories and a lot of variety, because it's different for everybody. So for me, that is how I thought I would be able to handle it, was just kind of listening to other people's stories. And I do feel like that helped me. I don't, you know, for everybody's different, but for me, I felt like having all of that knowledge of other people's stories really just helped me this time around.
And do you remember like some of the specifics of how it helped?
So, I mean, just there was one story, on your podcast, I think the woman's name was Margot, and she talked about her first birth, how she got an epidural and how she felt after, and she cried on your show and was still kind of processing that. And I think she was talking about her first birth, and then she knew for the second birth she wanted to not get an epidural. And for me, that's exactly how I felt. I felt really kind of like I gave up, and I knew that the second time around I wanted things to be different. And it just, and I also knew how people talked about how it felt. So it's not only just about like wanting to prove something, or how my doctor said, you don't have to be a hero. And it's not about that. I wanted to have this experience that people talked about on all these podcasts. And so for me, it was like, all these women could do it. I know that we are made to do this, and I knew I could do it. So for me, it just having that mental that all these other women can do it, I know I could do it as well.
I'm going to see about looking. I think I know the episode that you're talking about. I'll link it on the show notes too.
Okay.
Yeah. So then you were listening to all the stories. You took the coping mechanisms class for labor, and you're feeling more at ease. How did this one start?
So I knew I didn't want the epidural, but I actually ended up scheduling an induction. And the reason why is I don't know how offices work in other places, but at mine, there's a number of OBs, and you just get whoever's on call. And I have just very strong feelings of about a couple of the OBs in the practice that I really did not feel comfortable having a baby with. I, in some of my prenatal appointments, because we have to rotate and see them all, I had gotten comments that were really concerning to me, that I actually didn't really feel safe delivering with them. And so there's not many, I live in the suburbs of Illinois, and where we live, there's just not many options. All the practices work that way. So I really only wanted two specific doctors in the practice to deliver my baby. And so the only way to guarantee that was to schedule an induction with one of them. And in my mind, I felt more comfortable going that route and trying to not have an epidural than taking the risk of who would be on call. So I did schedule an induction.
Yeah, and you had had that experience before and it had worked out. And also, like for a good birth, it's really important that you feel safe, secure, and supported. I cannot understate how important those things are, overstate how important those things are. Because if you're not feeling safe, secure, and supported, oxytocin's not going to flow.
Right. And
Period.
I had heard that on a number of podcasts about how important it is to feel, all of those things, safe and supported with your provider or whoever your birth team was or is. And so for me, I felt that it was really important that I delivered with one of the two OBs that I felt the most comfortable with. So I was able to schedule with one of those doctors in the practice, but I had to do it through induction. So
How far along were you?
39 weeks and a couple of days. And my office doesn't do inductions Thursday through Sunday, so it's kind of like a short window. The doctor's only one of the doctor does on call hours, so it was kind of just like probably a little bit earlier, which made me nervous. And my other daughter came at 40 and two, so.
Yeah. So then 39 week 30, so the induction date came, and then how, yeah, tell me more about that.
Yeah, so the induction date came, and I was almost 2 centimeters dilated. I don't a little bit of phase. So we went in at 5:45 in the morning. They kind of got everything set up, and they started Pitocin around 8:30. So between 8:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m., I only progressed 1 centimeter. And so they had done Pitocin. They didn't do any Cervidil or Cytotec. And my contractions, I was just kind of managing through. They were coming, but it wasn't anything super painful. So at 1:30, they broke my water. And after they broke my water, contractions started to get a little bit more regular and a little bit more intense. But I had a yoga ball in there, and my doctor and my nurses were all fantastic about not even bringing up any type of pain management at all. We took a walk around the hospital, and we're just kind of trying to get things going, and also just when needed, just breathing through. My husband was doing counter pressure. And then right around like 4:15, things got really intense, really, really intense very quickly. So it went from just being able to breathe, and we were just counting to 10 and, ins and out, and then to the point where I felt like I couldn't speak or move or do anything. It was like this huge, very intense shift that I never felt with my first birth because I got the epidural so early on. But it was at that point I actually said to my husband, I said, I think I need to get checked. And if I'm not far enough along, I think I need to get the epidural. And my husband was like, you don't want it. Oh, I need it. And so I was like, I'm not going to feel disappointed in saying that I want to get it. It just like was this crazy shift. So that was around like 4:15, we had that conversation. At 4:30, 4:40, the nurse came in and she checked me and said I was 4 centimeters dilated. So right before she came in, I actually went and sat on the toilet. It was like the yoga ball was too high for me to like lean over the bed comfortably, because for me, sitting was a more comfortable position and like bending forward, but the yoga ball was too high and the chairs were too low and the toilet was actually like the perfect length or perfect height. So my husband would sit in front of me and I would kind of lean forward and he would rub my back or do counter pressure. So I was sitting in the bathroom and the nurse came in to check me and she said, okay, come over to the bed. And I had a really difficult time getting from the toilet to the bed for her to check me. Away, I'm going to be able to do this if I can't even physically move. So she said that, and they said, okay, we'll call the anesthesiologist. So now it's like 4:45, and with my first birth, my hospital requires that the partner leaves the room in case they pass out or whatever. So I said to my husband, right before the anesthesiologist comes, go grab some food downstairs. And I said, don't leave the hospital. Because with my first, he actually left the hospital because I was only 1 centimeter. And I said, don't leave. I just feel like it's going to go faster. Don't leave. Just run downstairs. So they said the anesthesiologist would be up in a couple minutes. So why don't I move over to the bed and he would leave? So I go over to the bed and just start screaming, right? My husband leaves and I get in the bed and I start screaming and I physically just cannot move. I'm grabbing the rail of the bed and screaming at the top of my lungs in pain. And the nurse is just saying, Molly, I need you to lay on your back. We're going to check you again. And I was like, I can't move. I cannot move from this position on my side, hugging the rail. So she gets on her walkie and calls my doctor in, and my doctor comes in and checks me. She's like, okay, you're at 6 centimeters. So in a matter of, I don't know, it was like 5 minutes, I went from 4 to 6. But she's like, you still got a while. So I'm like, in my head, there's no way I'm even going to be able to get an epidural because I cannot move from this position. So I would say another like 2, 3 minutes goes by, and the anesthesiologist walks in. And as he's walking in, I'm hugging the side rail, screaming that I'm pooping. I'm like, I'm pooping and I cannot move. And I just remember, from what I remember, like it feels very foggy, but that I was just hugging this side rail, screaming and feeling this sensation that feels like I was going to the bathroom and my body just kind of like pushing. And so I'm like screaming and gasping. And so the nurse just sticks her hand in and checks me. And she's like, you're not pooping, you're crowning. And this is all a matter of minutes. So from the time that I was, my husband left at around 4:45 to the time that the anesthesiologist walks in and I'm feeling this pain, and all of these screams and pushes that I couldn't control. So the nurse calls the doctor and says, "I need the doctor back in right now." And the doctor walks in, and the baby was already crowning, and the doctor had time to put on her gloves, and the baby was just born. So my daughter was born at 5:02, and my husband said as he walked out of the room, he checked his phone and it was 4:50. So right before he left, I was 4 centimeters, and then I had the baby at 5:02. So I didn't get the epidural, and my husband missed the birth because he ran downstairs to get food.
Oh my
So,
goodness. All the things, right? What an intense 12 minutes.
yes.
Yeah, from when he left. That's a lot of intensity. Let's take a break to catch our breaths, and we'll be right back. Have you ever been looking for a specific photo on your phone and spent quite a long time just scrolling by, not being able to find it, even though you remember when it happened? I know I am constantly frustrated that my photos are deep in the depths of my phone photo roll or scattered over email or text messages that I've gotten from my husband or my daughter. It is frustrating that I can't find them, the photos, when I want to. Enter Family Album. Family Album is a fantastic family-focused photo sharing app that makes it easy for parents to share photos and videos of their kids with their family. The app is free, it offers unlimited storage, and it has no ads. Family Album automatically sorts your photos and videos by date, and they also put together short video collages with 1-second clips highlighting your best photos and videos so you can watch how your children have grown and changed over time. And Family Album keeps things private, so only the people you invite to your album can see your family's photo album. I love that I can share our family album just with my parents in Venezuela so they can also have exclusive pictures of Annika at their fingertips instead of having to go digging through social media or their emails. I highly recommend you give Family Album a try. I think you will be pleasantly surprised. And remember that Family Album is free to use with unlimited storage and has no ads. Family Album does not collect user data and has strong privacy controls in place. Find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. That's Family Album all in one word. And we are back talking with Molly Chesterson. Molly, I am so sorry your husband missed the birth.
Yes, it was. We were, while that was happening, I mean, it was such a like, I it was like an out of body experience for me that I still can't even believe that happened, and then that is real. But I was also screaming for him. I was screaming at the top of my lungs, and my nurse just kept saying, "Molly, I need you to calm down. You're gonna have the baby." And I was screaming for my husband to say, like, and I was trying to hold the baby in because I wanted him to be there. And I was also trying to unlock my phone to call him at the same time. And it was all just so fast and so crazy. I don't even know how else to describe it. And all I really vividly remember is hugging the side and them telling me to lay on my back and me screaming no. So
Yeah, there was no way you were going to move anywhere.
there was no way. And I know from listening to a lot of podcasts that you can give birth on your side. So I was like, I am not moving.
They can figure it out, right?
Exactly. And the doctor wasn't telling me to lay on my back. It was just the nurse. I think she was really nervous that I was on my side, but I was not moving. So.
Yeah, and that baby. So at the end, I mean, even though you've had inductions and you've had. Once it gets going, it does get going both times. And this definitely speaks to the experiences that your mom had.
Yes, exactly. And that is what was so crazy to me because and it makes sense now. I feel okay that I had said I wanted the epidural and but it makes sense that I was going through this really crazy transition, I guess, from bore to delivery in a matter of minutes. And why the pain just shifted. Like there was this moment where I was okay through contractions to a moment where I was not. And it was very difficult. And I had sent you a picture. There's me sitting on the bed with an eye mask on, and that's actually for every contraction. I pulled that mask down so it was dark, and that really helped me just having kind of like a blank thing to look at. instead of all the things in the hospital. But when that moment came, I really felt a shift, and there was nothing I could do to kind of help me get through the pain of those contractions. Like I said, it was really difficult to even move from one position to the next.
Do you remember at all what was happening with the Pitocin at that point?
I think it got up to 12, but then they lowered it because my contractions had gotten really close together, which they lowered it around like 4 o'clock. So it was just before I gave birth, they lowered it like an hour before. But I think it got up to 12 because it wasn't really, it took me a while to even get to 4 centimeters. Because at 1 o'clock when they broke my water, I was still like a two.
Well, and to put it into perspective also, like early labor tends to take a long time. So it wasn't that things weren't progressing at the beginning. It just takes a lot of effort to get that cervix to start moving. But in your case, once it did and that water was cushioning was gone, whew.
Exactly. So once it started, it really kind of got started. So yeah, it was crazy. And so after I had the baby, they didn't give her to me, which with my first daughter, they gave her to me right away. And actually with my first daughter, her cord was around her neck. But they just slipped it off, and it what you know, which is happens in a lot of babies. But they were able to give her to me right away, and this time they didn't, and she wasn't crying. And I also know that, from everything I've listened to, that a baby not crying is not necessarily a bad thing. But my husband was in the room, and I couldn't see anything. They just had her down by my legs, so I'm screaming for him, also trying to call him, and also at trying to figure out what's going on with the baby because nobody is saying anything. So I was really panicking. And I was asking, is she okay? Is she okay? And no one's really saying anything. They said she was kind of stunned from coming out so fast. And so she was down there. For me, it felt like a really long time. I have no idea in terms of minutes how long she was down there. But then I heard a little sneeze, and they're like, see, she sneezed. She's okay. And so that was kind of a huge relief. But then they took her right over to the warming station and were doing all this suctioning. And it wasn't until after my husband came back that they gave her to me. And actually, a nurse had to go and get my husband because there was no service in the hospital. And so I called him probably 15 times, and it was just going to voicemail. So a nurse went to go get him. And they went up to him and said, Mr. Chesterson, your wife just had the baby. And he said he just like blank face stared at her and just ran and came in. And when he walked in the room, I will never forget his face. He was so sad and also so shocked. And I felt so bad that he missed it. But obviously, there was nothing I could do.
Oh, of course
So,
not. No, I mean, your baby had plans. Oh, but I do feel bad that he missed. Of course, right? That's not what he wanted. So then, when did you get your baby?
Probably, I don't know, like 15 minutes after she was born, they did because once they took her over there and did all the suctioning and stuff, and then they did the footprints and the weighing and all of that, so it maybe like 15 minutes, which I mean, I don't know. I really just wanted to have her right after she was born, and no one ever said if there was anything happened when she came out. So I'm not really sure what happened down there and why they didn't give her to me, but and I didn't ask after, but yeah, it felt like forever because with my first, they just gave her to me right away, which is what I wanted, but.
And so how are you feeling about the whole experience now?
I am feeling I'm really happy. I didn't get the epidural. And I've told some of my friends, I'm like, oh, you're so lucky it went so fast. And I'm like, I don't really know. It was really intense. Not just from the pain, because the pain part was very short. Because it was like from 4:30 when the contractions kind of shifted until I had her. That it was really painful, but I would just say kind of in my mind, and the fact that my husband wasn't there, that for me just kind of makes me really sad. But in general, the after experience, I feel so much better. I was able to get up right away, go to the bathroom. Like I had to get a catheter with her, my first daughter, for a while. I was numb for so long. And I haven't had that leg numbness. And so in general, I'm so much happier with the experience this time around. And I'm happy that my husband and I got to kind of just like manage through the pain together, and we had techniques, and we were more prepared going into it on how to deal with it. And then the after birth just being so much easier. But though that kind of window of 30 minutes of when things got intense to when it got really intense, it's kind of like a brain fog. But I guess I'm just really happy she came out and she's safe and all of that. So.
And sometimes those really fast births, I feel this idea, like your friend saying, "Oh, you're so lucky it went so fast," because it like the same things need to happen, right? The body needs to open, the baby needs to come through, all the same events need to happen, but they just get all that intensity gets kind of condensed into such a short amount of time that sometimes it can be even like shocking or traumatic, right? That it's you get kind of like get hit with a truck and then go like, what just happened?
And that's exactly like I just remember holding onto the bed and screaming so loud. That it was just so intense. But I'm happy I was able to experience both, because with my first daughter, it was a very relaxing experience, even having that epidural, and just even the pushing was just very relaxed. So this time I really felt, and I heard in podcasts you've done and in other podcasts, this people talk about the baby just kind of being pushed out on its own, like you not pushing. And that's exactly what this felt like. Like I wasn't pushing. I was, in fact, I was trying to hold her in so my husband could get back.
Right. Yeah, that's that fetal ejection reflex. And it kind of shows that your body, especially when the contractions were getting so close together that they had to turn down the Pitocin, at some point your body took over. Your birth, your labor took over, and clearly your own oxytocin was flowing like gangbusters. To basically between your baby and your uterus, do they do the dance and push baby out? That it's my, what is it, my can't but poop mantra. Like there's no way. Can't but push.
It was crazy. So yeah, but overall, I would say both very different experiences. But at the end of the day, I'm really happy just with even with being induced and being on Pitocin, and thinking I was gonna get that epidural. Just really happy I didn't even have time, and it kind of ended that way. So.
Yeah, and that was more sort of the hit, like every birth hits a wall, right? When it's that intense. And I feel that that was that response rather than like the first response that you had with your first baby of, oh my gosh, I am so not far along and things are not intense. I can't do, different kind of overwhelm. Yeah.
It's also really interesting with all of the things I listened to ahead of time, how some people talked about things that really worked for them and then things that don't work for them. And you really just don't know until you get in there and you're experiencing it. Because when I got towards, I don't know, maybe like 4 o'clock, my IV pole kept the monitor kept beeping. And that really got to me. Every time I heard it go off, I felt like it just threw everything off, and I was really struggling with the beeping noise. So it's just interesting that little triggers when you're going through the pain, it's probably just so different for everybody, with what works for them, what doesn't work for them, and that kind of thing. So as much as you can listen to things and be prepared, it's what everybody says. You really can never fully prepare because you don't know how you're going to deal with it or handle it.
Exactly. Yeah, it does its own thing for sure.
Yeah.
What were some other things that did work for you? You mentioned your eye mask.
So yeah, the eye mask, I think it's called like a Blinky's 40 or Bucky's 40. I don't know. It was like $10 on Amazon, but I had heard about it on Birth Queens that one of the doulas talked about that she recommends everyone get it. So I got it thinking I would use it to sleep at night in the hospital. But once contractions started, I just put it on, and every time I had a contraction, I would pull it down over my eyes. And that's also how my husband knew I was having a contraction, is I would pull the mask down so he knew to kind of to start counting for me or to do counter pressure. And that really worked for me. Just kind of having nothing in sight and it just being black really helped. And then I would say the yoga ball helped in the beginning, in earlier contractions, but once it started getting a little bit more intense, like I mentioned before, the height and bending over was really, really painful. And that's also something interesting I've heard in podcasts, and is that something might work for a while and then stop working. And that's how the yoga ball was for me. And then sitting on the toilet because of the height and how I could lean over, even though I wasn't going to the bathroom, just sitting on it really. That was actually probably the most comfortable spot for me.
And it, as you were saying, how you were there and your husband was sitting in front of you and rubbing your back, and like that seemed like a very lovely moment of the two of you, tucked away in the bathroom on your own, doing your own thing.
Yes, it was. It was really, like I said, it was really nice to just kind of have him there and have that experience with him. To go through that and just for him to be really present with me. 'Cause last time we both just kind of slept and it was just kind of like, all right, what time is it? When are things going to get going? And this time it was more us doing it together.
Yeah. Did you tear at all?
No, with both births, I didn't. So for both, I was shocked this time around with how fast she came out that I didn't. But yeah, no, with both, I didn't need any stitches or anything.
That makes recovery easier for sure.
Yes,
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah, for me, recovery has been super, super easy because I, not nothing, no tears or anything. So
And how is postpartum going?
it's good. I would say the biggest adjustment is obviously my 2-year-old, just kind of for her adjusting. She's doing really well, but sleeping through the night for her has been a little bit of a challenge. Like the first night home, she woke up in the middle of the night wanting to hold the baby at 3 a.m. And we were like, no, well, you can hold her in the morning. So things like that make it just a little bit more tiring when you're trying, like with my first daughter, when she napped, I really was able to nap and rest and recover. And this time around, it's just not as easy when you have another kid at home. And then the other thing with just postpartum and after you have a baby is just kind of the breastfeeding. And I would say for me, I'm someone who produces a lot of milk. And that's also something people are like, oh, you're so lucky. And it's great to be able to provide for my daughter. But it's also has its own challenges. Like my daughter choking on milk all the time, and just the way she eats it and the latch, because she doesn't need to have a good latch because she still gets milk, can just be really painful and stressful. But I would say that's another thing I really made sure to have support ahead of time. So I found a lactation consultant who would be able to come to my house if I needed the help. She was texting me in the hospital. And just with any questions I had and different holds and things like that, and was ready to come if I needed her. I didn't end up needing her to come to my house, but I felt really happy that I had that support had I needed her to come. Because I waited with my first daughter to for 2 weeks to then go back to the hospital to see their lactation consultant. And it took us about like 6 to 8 weeks my first time around to not have pain and to not cry every time I nursed her. So this time it's going much better, and I feel like, one, because I've done it before, but two, I just had a lot more support this time around going into it.
Yeah, and 2 weeks is a really long time when you're establishing breastfeeding. So yes, I agree that like that should be the first call on speed dial, especially after the milk comes in, just to set.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, waiting so long the first time around, just it took a lot longer to then heal from all the damage that was done and all of that. So I just think that was really helpful. I prepared in a different way with that this time and making sure I had the support kind of ready to go so I could address it like day one if I needed. So.
Excellent. What is there anything else that you wanted to make sure the listeners knew about as we wrap up?
I would just say, like, from my experience and my thoughts is if you want to have an epidural or you don't want to have an epidural, whatever you feel more comfortable with, but if you don't want to have one, you can do it. Like just knowing that you can do it and finding what's going to work for you and kind of preparing and whatever that means for you. Because I think some people love to get all the information and some people don't. But really just find whatever is gonna you think is gonna be the best experience for you. And I think for some people that is an epidural, but for some people that's not having one, and then it just means something different for everybody. And so no way is the wrong way, but just find whatever is going to be the best birth experience for you. It's amazing, and it's something that only happens very few times in your life, depending on how many kids you have. So trying to have the best experience possible and also knowing that things aren't always going to go to plan, but prepare in whatever way you can.
Yeah, I love that. You do you. Like, find your choices that are right for you because this is your experience. Be selfish and really, truthfully, at the end of the day, the only person that can judge your choices is yourself. Right? Like, if you just wanted to, schedule a cesarean, do that. And know what the pros and cons of it are, right? Not just blindly do it. And if you're doing it for fear, then that might be an opportunity to see a little bit more what the experience is about, is the only thing I would say, because doing things for fear can sometimes bring regret afterwards. But yeah, you do you.
Yeah. And I think it's so amazing that there's this podcast and there's so many books and so many different resources and all the guests you have on your show that there's so much information out there for people and free information if you can't take a class or get a doula or any of those things that can really help people and also to make informed decisions, which is really important as well. So I think it's amazing all of the resources that are out there for people, especially navigating things where it's if you're having it in a hospital, it can become very medical very quickly. So, it's great to have a lot of resources.
Agreed. Thank you so much, Molly, for sharing your story today. It's been really a pleasure to hear it.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy that I was able to share it and to speak with you today.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. And if what you want to do is get ready for life with a newborn, then go to birthfulcourses.com and sign up for my Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes. Let's get you postpartum ready. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the amazing Birthful patrons, and the wonderful people at Yoga Sleep and Family Album. Go to yogasleep.com/birthful for an exclusive 20% off a sound machine and find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin MacLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Oh, and here's what Molly said when I asked her about breakfast.
I'm probably going to have some eggs and oatmeal for breakfast.
I'm Adriana Losada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2020 by Adriana Losada.